Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and today we have a great guest in store for you, Robbie Crabtree. He has worked as an attorney on over 100 high-profile cases, along with teaching persuasive speaking at Southern Methodist University Law School. He also coaches students to compete nationally in speech competitions every semester. He's worked with leaders at Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Reddit to develop their speaking ability. It is my pleasure to welcome Robbie to our show today.
Hey, Belinda. It's so great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Being a professional speaker myself, I'm really excited to hear some of the things that you're doing and working on and what's going on with you. So this is going to be a great interview. I'm super excited.
It's great to talk to another speaker like yourself. I'm really looking forward to it. It's always fun to do this kind of dance when you're with somebody like yourself.
Great. So let's just, for our audience, fill in some of the gaps from your bio. Tell them a little bit more about you and what you're doing today and the journey on how you got here.
Yeah, absolutely, Belinda. It's an interesting journey. As I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in this linear career path that they go through. And I found that the most exciting way for me to make big leaps in my career is to really get outside of my comfort zone and take kind of these non-traditional routes to get where I want to go. And so currently what I do is a number of things. So I work as a consultant and coach, especially for founders in fundraising when it comes to the seed stage, Series A, Series B. I also work with executives when they're trying to craft their message and communicate more effectively, whether that's to their team, whether that's to their customers, whether that's to board members, whatever that may be. Then I also, back because of COVID, I actually created an online course and ran that called Performative Speaking. And that's based on my philosophy of performative speaking, which I created over my time as a trial lawyer, where I tried 102 jury trials and, you know, handled anywhere from, you know, 100 to 300 cases at any time, spent years trying murders, capital murders, child abuse cases. And as you can imagine, when you spend enough time there, you need to get out of there. And that's why I made that kind of non-traditional leap out into more of the tech space, more of the leadership space, and doing a lot of speaking and teaching other people how to be great public speakers and great communicators.
Wow, that sounds super interesting. I can see why you wanted to shift after a period of time, but it's sounds like you're doing really interesting work today as well. That sounds awesome.
It's a lot of fun, right? It's I think it's a great lesson, hopefully, for other people to realize just because you have a skill set in one area of life, you know, being a trial lawyer, doesn't mean that you're stuck to only being a lawyer the rest of your life. And so lots of people have the same sort of experience. It just takes a little bit of faith in yourself to jump out there and start doing some of the things you want to. And, you know, in terms of the journey of how did I actually get here, it was really a simple kind of equation for me. Being a trial lawyer is all about minimizing risk and doing the work I do now with founders and with executives and people trying to build really world-changing visionary ideas. It's about maximizing rewards. And so when we think about minimizing risk versus maximizing rewards, I'm going to choose the latter all day long.
Wow, that's great, because I think for a lot of people, like you said, that have had a career path for a very long time, they're not necessarily happy, but they feel stuck and they feel like they can't leave that now, or they really don't know how to make that transition. So do you want to speak to that just a little bit before we dive into some of the other questions? Like, how did you, so you obviously were feeling like, oh man, like I'm kind of getting tired maybe of doing this, or maybe the content of what you were doing was overwhelming. And so you decided, I need to make a leap. And I do believe it in yourself, having other people believe in you. But like, what were some of the measures that you took? And what did that transition look like?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things you just need to really do a deep kind of inspection of yourself. What are your skill sets? What do you enjoy? And so I really looked at that. What do I have? What have I created over those years? And so obviously, I created an ability to be a very persuasive speaker. I'm very comfortable on that stage in those kind of high stakes situations, right? When you're thinking about a trial lawyer doing the work I did, it was, you know, life often was on the line, freedom was on the line. Mm-hmm. So I knew I like high stakes. I'm very comfortable in that world. I know I like speaking. I know I like telling stories. I always say being a trial lawyer is just a game of competitive storytelling. So I knew that these are all strengths that I have. Where does that fit in that I can start doing things that I find more rewarding to myself and make me kind of live that life that I want to live? And so I said, it makes a lot of sense. All of these tech founders are going out there and they're having to communicate their ideas, but oftentimes they're not great at communication. Like oftentimes they're brilliant when it comes to building product or coming up with ideas, but how do they say the right words? How do they tell their story? How do they get in front of investors, in front of employees when they're hiring the first teams? How do they get in front of customers and actually relay that message? And the question I always think through is, how can I help people with world-changing ideas actually communicate their ideas to change the world? And I started figuring out that's kind of this strength that I can lean on and build on. And so that's ultimately how I started that transition. And I did it quite simply by spending some time on Twitter, spending time in Clubhouse, spending time around this group of people and learning their language, learning how they operated, and figuring out how I could quickly get myself involved into that. And then I just started talking about this message and demonstrating subject matter expertise, which ultimately led to this transition working really smoothly.
Wow, that is fantastic. And that was really some great advice. So I love that. How's the business shaped your lifestyle today? So I'm sure when you were doing these high profile murder cases and working as a trial lawyer, it was a very busy time. So now that you've transitioned into doing something different with your skill sets, how has that affected your lifestyle today?
Yeah, the way it's affected my lifestyle is it allows me a freedom to work from where I want to. So I'm coming in this interview and I'm in Brooklyn and I've been working here, and I'll go back to Dallas and then I'll go to Austin, and I'll go to San Francisco, and I'll go to Miami, and I'll go to all the places I want to, which is one way that this new line of work allows me to live the life that I want to. And the other thing that it also does is, again, it goes back to this idea of maximizing rewards, like getting to actually see that positive change and getting to see people light up. It just brings a lot of joy where the work doesn't feel like work. And I get that that's silly to say because everyone says, you know, find something where it doesn't feel like work. But when you get it, when you actually come across that, it really does feel that way where you're like, this is great. And I don't have to separate now work from life. It's just kind of life. Mm-hmm. And I'm not counting down to that next vacation because I'm just living the lifestyle that I want to because I'm now fully in control.
Right. Absolutely. That was really the premise of the entire show. When I really sat down and thought about it, it's like happy people. Work is going to make up a huge amount of our time, no matter what. Like it just is earning a living and having the things you want and providing for a family or all those things. You're going to have to do it through some means of work, unless you inherited a lot of money from somewhere. But you're going to have to do it through some means of work. And for people that absolutely just love what they do, it doesn't feel like work. It's not a drudgery. They actually get up every day and enjoy doing it. And so that really was the whole premise of the show, is loving what you do and finding that special thing that allows you to sort of integrate life and work.
Yeah, I think that that's brilliantly put. And it's so important. And I think we oftentimes forget that. Like, we do need to work, we need to survive, but we also need to enjoy what we do. And you want to find that perfect blend. So it doesn't feel like work life, it just feels like life. And I think you're spot on there, Belinda.
Well, thank you very much. So what have you identified as a couple of your superpowers? Like, what makes you really stand out? Or what are those couple of skill sets that really have helped push you forward?
So the big thing is obviously going to just be the speaking ability, like the ability to understand how you use persuasion tactics and tools and techniques, how you use frameworks, how you can kind of move between circles and speak the language of your audience. That has absolutely been by far my strongest skill set in terms of, like, what it allows me to essentially do is when I get on stage or get in front of people, I don't have to tell them my expertise. I just get to show it. And that's so much more powerful because I get to see it in practice. But then the second thing is, and this is, I think, really challenging because there's a lot of great speakers out there. I know a lot of the great speakers, but they aren't able to translate that skill set to somebody else. And so what I found that works really well for me, and I was very fortunate, I've spent a lot of time with a close friend of mine, Justin Mikoloy, who was the former speechwriter for General Petraeus and General Mattis. And I've spent a lot of time with him getting into his head about how he would write their speeches and how he thought about it. And that's really helped me develop that skill set to translate the things that I'm very comfortable doing as a speaker and let the people I'm working with understand how they can do that themselves. And essentially, I can give them frameworks that they then implement. So instead of giving them a fish, I'm helping them become a fisherman or a fisherwoman or whatever it may be. And that's what's so interesting and I found very successful is a lot of great speakers are great speakers. There aren't many who are great speakers and can also translate that and help other people achieve that same result.
Agreed. I agree with that wholeheartedly. So I love this. And when do you think that you realized that you really had this skill set, that this was a skill set that you were able to convey ideas to other people in a way that was interesting and fun and whatever, grabbed their attention?
Yeah, I think I really realized this when I started teaching persuasive speaking at SMU Law School. And that was when I was in my fifth year as a trial lawyer, is they asked me to come back and teach that program. And that was my first opportunity to really test out, can I translate the things that I know, the skills that I've developed in a way that students are able to then implement? And that was a really interesting learning process because it went well, but I certainly made some mistakes. I'll be the first person to admit that. Like I took for granted some of the things that I knew that other people didn't know. And so sometimes I just assumed a lot of things that were wrong. And I had to really refine that and start thinking through that beginner's mindset more. And once I started achieving that, that's where in year two, things really took off. But again, the only reason that that was even successful, and I think this is a good note for other people to embrace, is I asked for brutal feedback from my students. Even though I was this lawyer who had been trying all these big cases, and I have a bunch of law students, I told them, like, please tell me, be just brutally honest. What worked? What didn't work? Like, what should I change? And I was really open to it because that's the only way we can actually test our ideas and get better.
Absolutely. I did very similar things at the very beginning of my speaking career. Oftentimes, I would ask for that feedback or how well was this easy for you to go implement, because that was important to me too. But I also had to be very open to criticisms, if you will. And I think that people become so defensive in criticism that they allow it to, either they completely ignore it or they allow it to paralyze them. This has been also my observation. So I always say, you don't have to take it so personally, but you need to see, where's the grain of truth in that? I remember it was like only the third speech that I had ever given. And I thought I did a really good job. The audience was going crazy. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to go put this into action. It's like you sit in my office, you're actually reading my mind, you know exactly what I'm going through. And so I was feeling really like, oh gosh, I did a good job today. And this woman came up to me while I was checking out of the hotel. And she said, I just want you to know that your voice was so shrill, it was making my hearing aids go off. And I wanted to say, you didn't take anything out of that. Are you for real? But I just said, well, thank you for that that feedback. And I thought about it. I didn't let it ruin all of the just, you know, like probably 25, 30, 40 great, awesome comments. But I said, okay, you know, what truth is there in that? And so then I started really analyzing, like when I was trying to make a point and get excited, I was going up really into a high pitch. And did I need to do that? And so I actually really started working on my voice like a singer does. And how can I become stronger without just becoming higher pitched? And I actually really worked on that. So as crazy as that one comment was, and kind of really inappropriate, it really caused me to dig a little deeper and say, okay, that's a great way I could probably improve here. And you know what? It did allow me to improve quickly.
It's crazy. I mean, that is the experience you'll have, is there's always going to be that one person who can find fault. But like you said, there's always something that we can take out of that and try to use it in a positive way. So I think that that's an incredible example, Belinda. And I love that you hit on this idea of like actually working with a kind of like a singer does, working kind of that voice, that muscle, and building that, because it is so important too, right? As a speaker, and for you to look at it in such a way and say, this was a really inappropriate comment. And like, that is not the way it should be done, but I'm still going to get value out of it. Says a lot about you. And I think more people can benefit from that sort of mindset when it comes to criticism.
Absolutely. I mean, I've had plenty of others, trust me, that I'll read about myself online and you're like, that is not true. And then I'm thinking, all right, where's the grain of truth in that? Where could I improve on that? And I've tried to always stay really sort of be able to look within myself without beating myself up. And there is a fine line. It's a dance in doing that for sure.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
So let's talk about one of your outstanding accomplishments or something that you're really proud of that you've been able to achieve in your business.
You know, one of the most exciting things that happened was I was working with a client, and it was a tough one because she spoke English as a second language. And there's always a difficulty there because generally speaking, when we're dealing with people who speak English as a second language, they have a lot of insecurities around that fact. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a huge fan of saying like that should be a strength. Instead of feeling like that's a weakness, use it as a strength, because I think it's so incredibly impressive when people learn multiple languages, especially when they learn English as a second or third or fourth language, because English is hard enough if that's your only language, let alone if it's your second, third, fourth. And so I just think it says so much about the individual. But I was working with her and she was a nurse and she had taken her nurse practitioner exam. She had passed that and was certified and had all the things she needed in order to get that job. But she had been searching for 6 months trying to get a job as a nurse practitioner. And she was struggling and struggling and struggling and just wasn't landing any of the roles that she was interviewing for. And so she came to me and we were working together and we spent about 3 weeks working on some interviewing techniques and how to present more, you know, warmth and presence through the camera, considering this was during the Zoom era and COVID was going on. So like it was all done remotely. We really discuss like how she can show her personality, how she can develop stories and use some different frameworks to connect more with her audience. And we just really worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And I remember we were about 2 weeks in our work when she said, hey, I got this interview. And I was like, great, this is amazing. Like, keep me updated. Went to the interview, came back to me, said, it went so much better than it's gone before. I'm really hopeful that they'll move me on. And she got the follow-up email. She got moved on to the next round. And that's where she actually met with it was 8 people that ended up being on this interview with her. And she did the interview and she didn't hear back from them for like 2 days. And she reached out to me and goes, Robbie, like, you know, what happened? I said, I don't know. Like, did you follow up with them and let them know you appreciated that? And she said, yeah, I sent them an email and let them know, thank you for their time. I said, well, why don't you just go ahead and create like individual videos and you can send those too. So they can actually see you again, see your face and hear your voice, because there's a power in that connection that comes through the voice. And so I wanted to push her to do that. She wasn't very comfortable, but ultimately she was like, okay, I'll do it if you think that that's a good thing to do. So she sent a personalized video to each of those individuals that night. The next morning, I open up my email and I see an email from her. And it's just, she's telling me that I got the job. I got my dream job. You're the second person I told. She goes, the only person that I told before you was my father who lives in Japan. But I wanted to make sure to say thank you for helping me land this job. And I've stayed in touch with her ever since. And she's just absolutely loving what she's doing. She's working her dream job. She loves her coworkers, loves the patients she gets to deal with. And it's just one of those moments when I was talking about maximizing rewards earlier. Mm-hmm. Like, this is it. Like, seeing her light up and seeing the joy in her. And she's an incredible human being. Like, I can't think of a better nurse practitioner out there. And watching her fulfill that dream and get to do what she loves was so, so memorable. And like, I'll never forget that feeling. I actually called my legal partner and told him, hey, I've got great news. And because I just kind of been talking to him about like this work I've been doing with her. And I was telling, and he answers the phone and he goes, oh, what, did we get like a big settlement or something? I said, no, 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 no big settlement. I said, it has nothing to do with that. And I just told him the story of this woman, and he just absolutely lost it too. I mean, we were so excited because it was just that joy in her email and in her tone and everything about it. So that's one of the stories that I think I'll be telling for the rest of my life.
And that's an awesome story. But it also brings us to how important it is in today's world of two things you hit on, video interviewing. I mean, this is a huge way that now companies are going to continue to do interviewing. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Even when COVID is over, it allows them to interview prospects from all over the country. Absolutely. And number two, the video follow-up. That's brilliant. That's probably what landed her that job.
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's just this level of added care, and it's this level of connection and warmth that you're creating, because sending a thank you email is great, but getting a video and actually seeing that person again, seeing their face, hearing their voice, that connection is really what draws you to them, especially when we're thinking about a role where it's like very human-centered, right? Because a nurse practitioner is dealing with patients every day, is dealing with patients' families every day. It is all about those people skills. And in those videos, what she demonstrated to them is, I've got them. Like, I understand the follow-up. I understand why it's so important to talk with empathy and compassion and warmth and presence, and to really connect with any person that I'm doing this job with. And I think you're totally right that those video follow-up thank yous really sealed that deal for her.
Wow, I love it. All right, so let's talk about the opposite of that. Let's talk about a challenge that you faced and then how you worked through that.
You know, this will actually go back to my time as a trial lawyer more, because this is something that I learned the hard way, and it was a tough lesson at the time, but it's paid off quite nicely moving forward. And I was in my eighth trial, and I had everything. The case was a slam dunk. I was a prosecutor at the time. I was trying a DWI case, so nothing super serious. But I mean, it was an absolute no-brainer. I had all the evidence, I had all the facts, trial went very smoothly, everything was good. And I got up and I gave my closing argument and just kind of laid out the facts. You know, he's above the limit. He told you he'd been drinking. The officer said this, this, and this. Like, there's no doubt about it. Go back and do your job. That's what you're here to do. He's guilty of the crime. Like, take care of it. And it was just very matter of a fact. It was very kind of clinical and cold, and there wasn't anything exciting. There wasn't anything emotional. But I was like, yeah, I've got the evidence. I've got the facts. I've got logic. I've got reason. I've got all these things that we think is what moves people to action. And then the jury came back about 30 minutes later and said not guilty. And I actually was just floored. Like, I felt like I'd been punched in the face, because I really didn't know what had happened. And fortunately for me, after that trial, I got to hear, as the jury talked to the defendant that they had just told was not guilty. And I was listening to it, and they told him, hey, we know that you were guilty. You know you were guilty, but we took your kind of apology or your remorse when you were talking up on the stand, because he had basically said, I shouldn't have been drinking, you're right, but I wasn't intoxicated. But they still said he was guilty, but they told him, we took your remorse as genuine. We felt that connection, and we think that you're not going to do this again. Make sure that you prove us right. And as I'm listening to that, I'm thinking to myself, oh, like, they were more emotionally connected with him than they were with me, even though they agreed that I was right. And it was this wake-up call to me where I was like, being right is not what gets people to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that moment that really changed my approach, where I was like, I've got to figure out how to connect with an audience. I've got to figure out how to build emotion into my talks. And of course, continuing to deliver content and deliver that reason and logic and facts and evidence and all those things. But I need to do it in a way that moves my audience. I can't just give it to them in black and white and think they're going to go and do the right thing. I've got to paint in color, so that they're inspired to take the action that I'm wanting them to do. And so it really just changed the trajectory of my career, because from that moment on, that's when I dove deep into all of this sort of human psychology and game theory and how do we talk to people and persuasion tactics and like what works. I was studying, you know, JFK and Winston Churchill and Martin Luther King Jr. and Brené Brown and all of these great speakers, Amanda Gorman recently. Why are they so effective? Because that's what I need to do. And again, that's where all of kind of my speaking knowledge and speaking kind of deep dives started taking place. And it was all because I lost that case.
Wow, that is awesome. And you know what? It really, sometimes I have a hard time putting my finger on it in an individual for me that I've sort of been working with is coming to mind because they always look fantastic. So on camera, like I'm always analyzing this, they look great. The content they're giving is spot on. Like I wouldn't teach it any differently, but it's like, why do these people not resonate with this person? And I always struggle to just put my finger on it or identify it, but it is the emotional connection. You're spot on. Like as soon as you said it, this individual that I've been sort of struggling with to try to help. I mean, a lot of people I can say, your presence on video needs to be better, you know, or here's how you can help you to be a better presenter. But it's just the emotional connection is completely missing. And I don't know, I'm sure you've found ways to teach that to people, but how do you really teach that to somebody until they have an experience like you just had, where it's just like, bam, right in your face? I mean, that's an awesome story, by the way. And I love it that you did that, because do you know how many times I asked that question on this show to give us a story, give us an example? And I would say to you that 90% of people are unable to articulate that, which is super interesting.
That's amazing. I mean, we learn from our failures, and you got to get out there and try things and see what works and see what doesn't. Like you said earlier, be open to criticism, and that's really where we grow. And so that story really was like a transformative moment. Like, I mean, I can remember the exact scene in my head. I can remember exactly what the jurors looked like. I can remember exactly what the defendant looked like. I can remember exactly what the defense attorney did and said in that trial. Like everything about it is so ingrained in my memory, because that was that moment where the light bulb went off and I just said, something's got to change here.
And how do you think that you teach people? This is kind of going into your field of expertise and probably what you teach in your course, but how do you teach someone to have a greater emotional connection?
So,
like, were some changes that you did immediately after that? What did you do to say, gosh, it's not about being right, it's about connecting? So what are some things you did to practice that better?
Yeah, 100%. The first thing that you do is you flip how you think about speaking. It's no longer about me. I don't judge any speech that I deliver on how I felt about it. I judge every speech based on how my audience reacts to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this mindset of, when I'm creating a talk, it's not about what I think needs to happen. It's about what's going to create that connection with my audience. What are they looking for? What do they need to hear? What do they need to feel? So like, once I start figuring out like what's going to move them to some sort of action, then I can start reverse engineering from there. And when I say reverse engineering, what I actually like to do is use external sources from my own personal life. And I teach this to other people, is use the ones from your personal life. So that could be a life experience where you felt some sort of emotion yourself, mm-hmm. and then figure out like, why were you moved in that way? I love using music. I love using movies and television and things of that nature, because I can go to specific scenes and say, I felt this emotion, this vibe, this mood when I watched it, when I heard that song. Now I need to figure out why. Why did I feel that way? And if I can figure that out, then I can look at that and basically reverse engineer and create this bridge from that moment I felt it to what I want my audience to feel and start building that out. So the example that I love to use is the last case I actually tried was a murder case. And I believe that it was self-defense. So I was actually on the defense side in this case. And I've tried plenty on the prosecution side. So, you know, I look pretty fairly on these, but I really did believe it was self-defense. It was on video though. So like, obviously pretty tough. It was in Texas, which is generally very law and order friendly. So mm-hmm. tough circumstances for me to be in the space that I was at. And I knew that I was delivering this closing argument, and essentially this man's life completely was held in my hands. If I delivered, then he had a chance. If I didn't, it was over. He was going to prison for 25, 30, 40 years. And I'm thinking to myself, the weight of this is just super heavy on myself. And I'm thinking, how do I connect to my audience? How do I get them to see that this idea of just because someone lost their life doesn't mean another person needs to lose their life, to basically do that eye for the eye type thing? And I went back to a scene from The West Wing, and it's in an episode called Take This Sabbath Day. And it's actually dealing with the death penalty. And there's a scene where Toby Ziegler was talking with his rabbi, and I went and analyzed that scene a number of times because I remember watching, and every time I did, I felt this sense of melancholy. And there's this theme throughout that talk where they're talking about vengeance is not Jewish. And I said, well, I can change that slightly to vengeance is not justice and use that as my hook and my theme throughout the entire talk. And then what I did is I looked at why was the scene so impactful. I mean, it was because of the music and the lighting. It was because of the way the conversation was framed. It was delivered in a very intimate and kind of soft manner. So like big pauses, very quiet tone, very close to one another, leaning in, doing things that could create a connection between the two of them. And I said, I can do that same thing. So in that closing argument that I delivered, I tried to recreate that scene as much as I possibly could through my delivery, very close to my jury, very soft-spoken, long, big pauses, vengeance is not justice, tying it back to this idea, and essentially trying to create this very deep melancholy feel inside of the courtroom so that they would hopefully feel this sense of responsibility that it's not an eye for an eye. Justice in America is different. And ultimately what happened at the end of that is the jury did in fact come back with a not guilty verdict on that murder. And my client was able to go home and continue to take care of his family.
Wow, that is an incredible story on all fronts. So, wow, that's awesome. And you articulated it in such a great way that all of our listeners are going to be able to or should be able to completely understand. I love that.
I always find stories are just the easiest way to relate. And so rather than me just tell somebody, oh, go look at a movie or television scene and recreate it, it's like, no, like here are the steps that I've actually used in very high profile situations. And if you can do it there, you can do it anywhere. And that's really the key to this is if I can use these things in a courtroom trying that kind of case, you can do it in any speech, in any talk, in any presentation, any pitch. And in fact, I was working this weekend with a founder on a fundraise, and I kept pulling up clips from JFK, from movie scenes, from television scenes, from different things. I said, this is the vibe that I want here. This is how I want it to sound, because that external source gives somebody a perspective and a example to start drawing from. So they're not trying to create from a blank page, even though I've given them my take on it. I've given them the words. Sometimes it's helpful to understand the tone and the vibe that we're trying to achieve. And you can pair that with different examples. And that's really where this kind of speech writing and coaching consulting side comes out, is I've got to have a wealth of these ideas to pull out to help people find that inspiration to create that emotional connection, because that really is what it's all about. So it's just incredibly important to create what I call inspiration lists and inspiration sources and basically have them ready to pull out at any time.
Love it. Absolutely love it. This has been this is so many little nuggets and pearls of wisdom. I hope our listeners will go back and listen to it a second time and take some notes, because I know lots of people, when they're listening on a podcast, they're walking, they're jogging, they're doing their morning routine, whatever it is that they do. But I always like to try to point out to our listeners, this one is noteworthy. You need to go back, and when you can actually sit down and actually take some really great notes for yourself. So thank you. This has been awesome.
I appreciate that, Belinda. It's great.
So let's talk about, what does work from your happy place mean to you? I think we've already got a pretty good feeling about that, but it's our signature question of the show. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
First off, it means doing work that I find meaningful. At the end of the day, I think that that's the most important thing, is it's not just tedious and kind of mind-numbing. It's meaningful work. And that doesn't mean that the meaningful work to me is going to be the same for anybody else. So it's a journey each person really needs to understand for themselves. But then it also involves not having to make this distinction between work and life, and just blending those two in a really seamless way. Which means that leads me to number three, and it's very location independent, where I can go places and really explore and find inspiration and energy from different locations that allow me to work to my full potential. And so I really think those three pieces are the main criteria that I'm looking for when it comes to working from my happy place.
That's great. So what advice would you give to others that might feel stuck in a career that they've been in for a long time, but just feel compelled to do something different, or are wanting to pursue this entrepreneurial journey? What advice would you give to those individuals?
The biggest piece of advice that I found very useful for me was you can start to attract people to your ideas and your thinking and test things in very low risk ways by writing about them or creating videos on them and putting them out. So you could be writing on a personal website. You could be writing on Twitter. You could be writing on Facebook. You'd be creating videos on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok or whatever it is, and see what starts resonating with people. And there's really no risk, because if nothing resonates, like, you have a good signal to move on to something else and try it out and see what works. But once you start realizing that there's traction, then you can start actually putting more time and actual resources into it. And if you find that you get enough traction, then you can really even take that leap where you feel much safer making that jump. And I think that that's one of those things you can do. You can also, like, if you're trying to create a new idea, a new coaching offering, a new consulting offer, a new course, a new product, you can even do things where you set up like a very simple card or Squarespace or whatever, like simple landing page, and just say, hey, going to launch this, interested, like sign up if you want to be one of the first 100 people to get it. And you don't even need to have a product. You don't even need to have an idea. You're just testing out to see if people are interested, if people will sign up. And so you can, again, do it in a really no risk way to see what ideas resonate. And I think that that's the start of the entrepreneur journey, is taking that first test balloon out there and seeing what comes back. And if it comes back positive and there's traction, go for it. And if it doesn't, continue to iterate and build and find something that does, that you love and are passionate about, and then build on that.
Perfect. That is great advice. So in closing, Robbie, what are some new and exciting things that you're working on, and how can our listeners find you?
The new and exciting things, I am launching the inaugural cohort of the On Deck Performative Speaking course. And that's an 8-week long course around this idea of becoming a great holistic speaker. And it's exciting because I've run this program before on my own, but back in December, On Deck actually acquired my course to come and teach it inside of their ecosystem. So super excited about that. And of course, I am constantly working with clients when it comes to doing really cool things as founders, as entrepreneurs, as executives. And I love that work. It's just always exciting. And anytime a new client comes on board, it just brings this new energy, because I get to learn a new thing and work with people and see them kind of maximize that reward. If people want to find me, the best way, honestly, is Twitter is where I'm most active. And that username is just at Robbie Crabb. I'm also very responsive there if people DM me or reach out to me. Then they can, of course, read my work at robbiecrabtree.com. And if you are interested in the On Deck program, you can find that at beondeck.com/performative-speaking.
Perfect. Well, again, Robbie, thank you so much for being on our show today. You really provided some really great insights for our listeners. I loved the interview incredibly. It was awesome. And I just want you to thank you for being our guest today. And to all of our listeners, I hope that you loved this as well. I hope you'll subscribe to Work From Your Happy Place so that you don't miss a single episode. And we've just started landing tips on Tuesdays, our Tuesday tips. So check that out. They're short 10 to 15 minute podcasts that are just tips from myself on being an entrepreneur. And we're doing our Thursday artist show. So we kind of are changing it up here. So make sure you subscribe and you don't miss a single thing. Once again, Robbie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Belinda. This was absolutely incredible. It's just so fun to be with you. And I really appreciate all your insight too. It's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thank you. And of course, Robbie and I both would love you to leave a review. So once again, we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.